Daly, and I think I've met most of you, but I'm going to be telling you about Dr. Ken Phillip, which some of you may have known, but Ken moved up here in 1965 and immediately began collecting butterflies and moths. He started the Alaska Lepidoptera Survey, which had over the course of, until his last field season, which was in 2013, he had about 600 volunteers across the state who collected butterflies and moths and sent them to him. He was based in Fairbanks. I had the pleasure of knowing Ken through my field work, which was began as an undergraduate on the North Slope at Tulip Field Station. So I corresponded with him for several years before meeting him in person. When he passed away in March of 2014, his collection was brought to the University of Alaska Museum. It will eventually be split with the Smithsonian. We'll tell you a little bit more about that at the end, but as for now, it is all at the University of Alaska Museum, and we're really happy to have had the opportunity to begin to work with it a little bit more. So, with that. So we had a lot of really wonderful things that happened over the past year. So I'm going to kind of go through the highlights that first we've been able to import all of the Alaska Lepidoptera Survey records into Arctos, so those are now publicly accessible, and I'm certain that there's going to be a lot of wonderful research that will come out of just having that accessible across the globe. The Butterflies of Alaska Field Guide was published. That was a project that Dr. Phillip had been working on extensively, and he did a lot of photography of live butterflies, and so his photos are in the field guide. We had three butterfly researchers that used the collection. We also had a National Moth Week project that slightly involved the collection. We did some barcode of life work with Lepidoptera out of the collection. I did a reorganization of it. The Smithsonian news is that they will be coming in June of this year, at the end of June, to look over the collection, but they are not splitting anything right now. So we still have the collection for the next 2 years. And during that 2 years, I have a plan for a research project that I'm going to use lots and lots of specimens from the collection to answer a question that I'm excited about. So I'll begin with the record survey. All records from 1966 until 2005 are now publicly accessible. We owe a huge thank you to Matt Bowser for orchestrating that effort. These were specimens that were, this map shows specimens that were collected by Ken, and we also had 20,465 butterfly specimens that were collected by volunteers of the Alaska Lepidoptera Survey. Dr. Phillip did not maintain a moth database at the same time, but I inventoried his collection to find that there are about 30,000 moth specimens within that, and so we hope at some point to have the resources for people to come up and identify those specimens, and eventually we can create similar records for the moths. But as of now, we have a lot of really wonderful butterfly information accessible. There is still a lot of work that we will need to do in terms of georeferencing. A lot of the coordinates that volunteers, or a lot of times when volunteers would send in records, they did not have associated coordinates, and so there was a program that could do, Google has a program to find the best fit locality, but a lot of these, the maximum error is quite large. So it took us a long time to go through these 1,450 Alaskan localities that where we had to find them using Google Earth or the Dictionary of Alaska Place Names. We did our best to try to reduce those coordinate errors down to a reasonable amount. Sometimes it was very easy, you know, if someone wrote 7 miles up Tributary Creek in, you know, Nome or wherever, but other times we spent quite a long time trying to figure out, you know, which Tributary Creek if there's more than one across the state. So, and a lot of these we were able to, but for the Canadian and the Russian records, we will still need to do our best to try to minimize these large circles that we have. But for the specimens that Dr. Phillip personally collected, those are all very good in terms of the coordinates that were associated with them. So the Butterflies of Alaska first edition, we received 500 copies at the University of Alaska Museum on the 2nd of December. There's less than 100 remaining, and I actually just found out that we will be sending most of the remaining books to BioQuip. We will also be selling them still at the University of Alaska Museum gift shop, but our numbers are definitely decreasing very rapidly. It was the bestseller of Fireweed Books in Palmer, Alaska. It's on their bestseller list. BioQuip, that number has jumped up from now, but we've sent them at least 130 copies. But I also found out that the gift shop is receiving calls statewide from former volunteers of the Lepidoptera survey, people that are interested in purchasing it. If anyone is interested in purchasing it online, BioQuip is still having a sale on it. It's $27 instead of the regular $30, but with shipping, it may end up being not worth it for that. But if you do order it online, that's an option until the end of January. So in 2015, we had three researchers who used the collection. From May until August, we had Dr. Zdeněk Frick, who is a Fulbright scholar, and he came from the Czech Republic. In June, we had Dr. Andy Warren come up from the McGuire Center for Lepidoptera and Biodiversity from the Florida Museum of Natural History. And in July, Dr. Greg Reed, who is based at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about how they use the collection in that way. Zdeněk was interested in the genetic diversity of Beringian species, so he was sampling just one leg off of many specimens, recently collected specimens from both Ken's collection and also the UAM insect collection. He did a wonderful job of identifying specimens for us. We had a former volunteer for Ken, who has continued to collect this past summer and in 2014, and he brought in over 250 specimens just this summer alone. And so Zdeněk was a great help in identifying all of those for us. And he also translated a lot of drawers. Dr. Philip collected in Russia. He had four different field collecting trips there, and some of the drawers that he prepared were also sent in by volunteers. And so some of those people would send in labels that were entirely in Cyrillic. And so Dr. Frick was an immense help in giving us an insight as to where those drawers were collected from. He also ended up donating 593 butterfly specimens to the UAM insect collection, so we're in the process of curating those and incorporating them into our main collection. Those are not accessible on Arctos yet. There's still a bit more work to be done with preparing those into curated envelopes and then making them accessible. But it was a really wonderful opportunity to have someone come in and use the collection in this way and to begin to build resources to make it accessible to other people. Through Zdeněk, we had an additional three researchers from Slovakia and the Czech Republic who came to visit the collection and did a bit of moth identification. So we had a tiny bit more of the moths were identified through his efforts. We had a new species that was discovered in the collection through Andy Warren's visit. Andy came up spontaneously. He was not planning to visit the collection. He didn't know it was at the University of Alaska Museum. We haven't put out a lot of publicity that the collection is here. He ended up looking at a lot of the Aeneas specimens, and he noticed that the Aeneas crixus that were from Tok, Alaska, and from that vicinity were much darker. They were separated out in Ken's drawers where he had Aeneas crixus from other areas and then this darker, larger species that he prepared them all, but he separated them into a different unit tray. And I have a picture of them on the next slide. So he said, you know, what is this? This is not crixus. This is not what we think it is. And as we began to look at specimens, there's a little clue that Ken had written, you know, Borre, which is Aeneas Borre, is another species, and he said, you know, that the genitalia was very much closer to that. And so Andy ended up looking through the McGuire Center collection. They received a large Alaska donation from Jack Harry, who did an extensive amount of butterfly sampling in the 70s in Alaska. And so he was convinced after looking at multiple specimens, not just from our collection, that there was a new species. This paper was just accepted in the Journal of Research on the Lepidoptera in January. Zdeněk would say it is much easier to describe a new species of Aeneas than to identify any one of them. And, you know, in this paper, if anyone's interested in reading it, it has been toned down to the idea that we don't really know about the Aeneas in Alaska. There hasn't been a huge amount of research done, and so it's very possible that this is not an entirely distinct new species. It may be a subspecies. It may be a hybrid between Aeneas crixus and Aeneas borei. But it's very interesting to see some of the differences. Now, our Aeneas crixus Alaskan species, we only have 4 specimens that are, you know, spread and mounted, so it's not a very wonderful comparison, but they are larger and darker, and they're definitely interesting looking to compare the two. So I look forward to seeing what results come from this paper. I imagine that a lot of people will be interested in examining specimens and coming to Alaska to look at these. Because, you know, I'm certainly no Aeneas expert, so I wouldn't have been able to know this, but to see that these were separated within Ken's collection, I realized that it was something that he was very aware of from the time. And so it was interesting to see this work kind of come to light as something that was a project that he had the intentions of pursuing, I could see, from separating it out in his drawer. The next project that used the collection, in July of 2015, there was a pilot study done at Guani Lake Research Station in the Yukon Territory, studying Euphydrius anisia, which is the Euphydrius and the checker spots are endangered in other parts of their range. We don't know very much about what they're doing in the Yukon. We don't have very many specimens from Alaska. There's only been 4 that were collected. So it's very unknown how the populations are doing today, but Dr. Greg Reed at UAF and then his friend Paul Severin and myself traveled out to Guani Lake just to sample and see how the populations were. And we used Dr. Phillips' collection and the ALS data set to get an idea of appropriate sampling sites and timing, where to go and where to see if we could collect it, and we ended up having great success with that. Dr. Greg Breed took these individuals, all of the legs were taken for various analyses, but we do have the rest of the specimens that were donated to the UAM collection. And through that trip, I also collected a lot of various species that I've donated to the collection too. So we've had some kind of results of people using the butterfly collections and now continuing to build the insect collections at the museum through this. July 24th, we had a National Moth Week celebration at Creamer's Field, and that's in Fairbanks. Dr. Phillip was a huge supporter of National Moth Week, which was started in 2011, but it has since grown to be practiced in all 50 states. 40 countries participated in National Moth Week last year. Dr. Phillip wrote a guest blog. These are excerpts, which didn't show up very well, but if you search online, you can find posts that he wrote about mothing in Alaska. And he was actively a supporter of this. He collected from the first year that he heard about it and would post species lists at the end. And so I was contacted by the founder of National Moth Week to try to gain the support of Senator Murkowski to co-sponsor Senate Resolution 70, which has been initiated twice now and failed in the congressional season, but the hope is to make this an officially designated week, and that doesn't really mean anything to the people who celebrate National Moth Week. They're still going to do it whether or not Senate Resolution 70 passes, but it offers the opportunity for more funding and more awareness. So my hope is that she would do this in a way of honoring Dr. Phillip and his lifelong legacy of work and research here in Alaska to promote Lepidoptera. I would also, if anyone is interested, I did write a letter to Senator Murkowski that I brought today, and I would love it if anyone would be interested in signing and writing your position and maybe your interest. I can also forward people links if you'd be interested in writing your own letter or giving her a call. You can call the Senate office so that I'm not the lone crazy moth lady calling. I've done that a few times. And I overheard her staff member call me that, so that's okay. I'm going to be the crazy moth lady, I don't mind. And we are planning to do this again. Unfortunately, late July is not a great time for moths here, at least in the interior. I had more people than moths that attended my event, but we're hoping to do 2 kind of on the outskirts of the summer where it's a bit darker. I tried black lighting, and we tried the people going out with nets, and I also tried baiting the trees, and I didn't have very much luck, but I think that what we're going to try to do this year is run two events, maybe one in April and one in September instead, and see how our species list might jump up from there. So I'm very excited to hear that there's interest in Moth Week events across Alaska. That would be phenomenal to have more of that going on next year. Another project that we had during this past year were that 211 Kenelm Phillips specimens were barcoded for the Barcode of Life, which Dr. Sykes will tell you more about. That represents 146 species. Of that, we're getting a little bit closer. We know that there's at least 794 Lepidoptera species in Alaska. We have almost all 84 species of Alaska butterflies sampled for BOLD as part of this initiative. One species that I'm concerned about is this Lycina phleus. It's a copper butterfly, and I was unable to find any recently collected specimens. We know that at some point in 1996, the specimen records just drop off, and Zdenek Frick was also searching for Lycina phleus. He was able to collect one specimen, but it was very badly damaged and worn, and so he thought it may possibly not be Lycina phleus after all. He will be running genetic analysis, so I will have an answer at some point if this was indeed that species, but it was the one that I was unable to find anything for recent material. So that's kind of the unfortunate side of that, but through that, it kind of got me this idea of trying to get an idea of abundance over time for all of our butterfly species to see if there are any other species that may potentially have declined that we can use museum records to get an idea of. And so I'll tell you a bit of my more recent plans is that I rearranged the collection. There are now five organized sections. There are curated envelopes. And we also have a taxonomic and a chronological section. So a lot of times, Dr. Phillip would prepare and spread butterflies and then put them in a drawer waiting to be labeled. So the chronological section is mixed taxa within, but they are, you know, all from one collecting event. There's a lot of drawers that are unsorted or of mixed decades, but those are things that we hope that at some point we will be able to incorporate into the taxonomic collection. And it will be possible to do that. It just all takes a lot of time. The Russian collection is also a bit more organized by field station now. So my hope is that by Zdenek Frick coming, there may be additional researchers that will be interested in accessing the collection while it is here. We also have a small exotic spread specimen. We know that the earliest specimens that we have from Dr. Phillip were when he was 17 years old, and he had various swallowtails from Staten Island, New York. There's also a moth section. There's taxonomic and unsorted mixed decades. When I say unsorted, it just means that we have multiple taxa and also, you know, a lot of mixed collecting events over time. So this is just a photo of the synoptic collection that Dr. Phillip prepared in the late 70s, but this represents almost all species of butterfly that we have in Alaska. And so with that, I'd like to tell you a bit about what I intend to do with my plans this year. I love this photo, but for those who can't read it, it's Dr. Phillip saying this collection is going to be a priceless resource down the road. And while I know that there are multiple research questions that can be answered using this collection, I was recently aware of this research that just came out of Zackenberg, Greenland, where they measured butterfly wings to find that the year after warmer summers, butterfly wings were smaller. And they found a measurable pattern over time. Now, they were measuring specimens from 1996 onwards, and they were measuring them at one field site. But I would like to do something similar with Dr. Phillips' collection. And what I've done so far is I've figured out the top five species for both the interior and the north slope. I'm interested in the interior because we have the longest collection record over time. We have from 1966 until 2013, where Dr. Phillip took in specimens. The north slope, the collecting effort was very much centered in the 1970s, and it really drops off from there just because it's hard to get to. But I think it would be phenomenal to find out if those patterns represent any changes in climate data. So I began talking to a researcher with the Geophysical Institute who can help me a bit with associating climate data with what I'm finding with the wing measurement. My plan is to use the curated envelope section, so I'm not going to be using the spread specimens. If I can avoid it, my hope is to get enough representation over each year that I will not be using the specimens that Dr. Philip prepared, because those are more valuable, you know, in the sense that many, many researchers will want to use those over time. So the curated envelopes, the specimens are still stored in little glycine envelopes, and I'm going to put them up against a light board and then use calipers to get an idea of what the wing lengths are, and I'm writing that wing length on the envelope. But as I measure, and I'm also going to hopefully have undergraduates helping me to do this measurement, those specimens will be linked to their records that have been imported, and so over time this will also help to curate the collection by tracing it, and so that people can go back and re-examine those specimens later. And these are just a few photos that Dr. Philip took of the various species that I'm interested in. And so I'm excited about that project, because I think that this will be a phenomenal way to actually use the specimens while they are still here. So we know that the Smithsonian will eventually be splitting the collection, and that the majority is destined to go there because they offered a huge amount of support to Dr. Philip over the course of the Alaska Lepidoptera survey. So I think that this will be a great way to link the specimens to the records, and also to continue to build our understanding of the Alaska Lepidoptera and how they may be responding to a warming world. So with that, I'm very excited to give you guys an update next year and let you know how that may go. I'd like to give a special thank you to Derek and the University of Alaska Museum for the support over the past year, and those who participated in the Alaska Lepidoptera survey. The National Park Service and the Smithsonian have been incredibly generous with allowing us to work with the collection and also to continue to answer these questions. So with that, I'm very excited to see how the next year goes. Tell you a bit more about it.
Okay, so with the Smithsonian, did he will this to the Smithsonian, or how did the Smithsonian get involved?
Yes, he did. So he willed the majority of the collection to them based on the amount of funding that he received over the years. The odd part is that within the will, it is stated that the majority of specimens pre-1990 will go to the Smithsonian. And so they are very flexible, and they seem willing to work out what may be best for both of us. It's also unknown the various preparation states. We don't know if they are interested in more of the spread collection, or there's a huge amount of material that Dr. Philip never had the time to prepare, and so they still remain in either Sucretz tins. He had a sponsorship with the Sucretz cough drop company, so we have thousands and thousands of these tiny little tins, and Amphora Tobacco also sponsored him, so we have a lot of tobacco canisters. So we don't really know the details of how that will work out in terms of what types of specimens they're interested in acquiring and what will stay. There's about 16,000 exotic butterfly specimens. Exotic could be anything from, you know, Wisconsin to Papua New Guinea. He had a huge Ethiopian collection too. And my hope is that those will go to the Smithsonian sooner than later, because you know, there's not a lot of interest in them up here. Incidentally, Dr. Frick also did African butterfly research, so he was thrilled to see all of them. But those will most likely be going right away. Yeah, other than that, we don't really know quite how the details will work out. We do hope to have a student photograph all of the drawers as Dr. Philip prepared them. We're still working on trying to find that student and finding the funding to make that happen, but our hope is to capture digital images of the drawers as they were prepared, and then, you know, that can be preserved forever. Are there other questions?
I have another one. Quick one. Okay, so how many specimens did he have?
So he had over 127,000 total, and of that, we know that it's over 111,000 were Alaska, Canada, and Russian specimens.
So, okay, just now, this may sound like a curious question, but now how much space does 100,000 specimens take?
Oh, it's magnificent.
Like, as big as this room, or did...
So within the University of Alaska, within the insect section of the collection, we have about three aisles that would span from this wall until maybe that second projector that's hanging from the ceiling.
They're 44 feet long.
Okay, 44 feet long. And then within the collection, nine of the 12 cabinets that we have going down one row, those nine of those cabinets are filled with his drawers and also some of the curated envelopes, which were stored in tiny index card boxes. And so nine cabinets, and then we also have various cabinets and boxes that contain the miscellaneous specimens. So it's a huge amount of, just a huge amount of material in general. It took us, I think, four large U-Haul loads. There's multiple U-Haul truck travels back and forth from Dr. Phillips' lab to the museum to move the collection.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot, Pat.